So, for example, in Job chapter 1 and verse 12, Job had a series of problems, right? We might say he had a pretty bad day. What caused it? What caused it was a conversation between the devil and God in heaven that Job knew nothing about. Job's counselors knew nothing about it. Elihu, later on in the book, knew nothing about it. And yet the Bible was very clear that Job's problems were rooted in what Satan did. We run into 2 Kings 6, verses 15 through 17, where Elisha is with his servant. And the servant is very worried because the army is surrounding them, getting ready to attack the enemy army. And Elisha said, "Don't worry, those that are with us are more than those that are with them." Of course, that puzzled the servant, and Elijah prayed that his eyes would be open, and for an instant he could see the mountains filled with angelic chariots. So there was an angelic protection around them. David had an idea to number the troops of Israel. 1 Chronicles 21:1 says that. God didn't want the troops numbered because God wanted David to trust God and not his natural armaments. And 1 Chronicles 21:1 is very clear. It says the devil put that thought into David's mind. Daniel 10, verses 12 and 13, and also verse 20, talks about Daniel being in prayer for the future of the nation. A vision of the future was dispatched from heaven by Gabriel to get to Daniel. And yet Daniel did not receive an answer to his prayer request for 3 weeks or 21 days. Now why is that? Because a fallen angel over Persia opposed Gabriel. And the two fought for 21 days. And finally, Michael had to be, the archangel had to be dispatched from heaven to assist Gabriel. And then finally, after a 21-day conflict, three-week conflict, the vision gets to Daniel. And the angel explains to Daniel why there has been a delay. It had to do with an invisible spiritual war. Peter had an idea one day. He tried to talk Jesus out of going to the cross. Of course, the cross is not even something that's revealed early on in Matthew, because the kingdom is being offered. But once the kingdom is rejected in Matthew 12 and the interim age starts to become apparent, Jesus talks more and more about his soon death, his soon crucifixion. And Peter, who was thinking it's still in a kingdom now sense, or an imminent kingdom sense, actually takes Jesus aside and rebukes him. Could you imagine doing that to Jesus? "Come over here, Jesus. I want to straighten you out about a couple things." And Jesus looks at him right in the eye and says, "Get behind me, what? Satan." And that statement probably shocked Peter more than anything else, because Peter thought he was just sharing his own ideas. But Jesus actually addresses the invisible spiritual being, the devil himself, that was motivating Peter. And, of course, spiritual warfare is a reality for us, because Ephesians 6 and verse 12 tells us that we're in a wrestling match. We wrestle not against what? Flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of this dark world. That's why we need to put on the full armor of what? Of God. And you see, there are things constantly taking place in the spiritual world which have some sort of pressure or influence on things happening in the physical world. As I'll show you today as we go through Revelation 12, that's how anti-Semitism, I believe, is to be understood. Revelation 12, like no chapter I know, pulls back the curtain and it pulls back the veil. And it allows us as mere mortals to actually get a glimpse of the invisible spiritual conflict. And what we learn from Revelation 12 is the devil has strategies. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11 says, "So that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we," Paul writes, "for we are not ignorant of his schemes." A scheme is a strategy. It's just like you might have a retirement strategy, you know, a marketing strategy. A good athletic coach, football, basketball, whatever the sport may be, you know, actually watches films of the other team and devises a game strategy. So strategizing requires intelligence, plotting, planning. And this ability that we have to strategize is not just unique to us. The devil himself actually has strategies that he uses. And because we don't really pay attention to the Word of God, we're ignorant of his strategies. Yet his strategies are always revealed in the Bible. And Paul says we, as apostles, are not ignorant of his strategies or his schemes. Now, related to the Messiah and the Jewish people, Satan has two strategies. The first strategy is given in verses 1 through 5 of Revelation 12. It is a past strategy that has failed related to the first coming of Christ. Beginning in verse 6 and going all the way through verse 17, we have a second strategy that Satan is implementing today and will implement in the future. I believe it reaches its zenith or its height or its climax in the second half of the tribulation period. And it's a strategy that he is implementing today and will implement in the future, and it involves not the first coming of Christ, it involves the second coming of Christ. And that strategy also one day will fail, just like his first strategy failed. So let's take a look, if we could, at Satan's first strategy. Notice, if you will, Revelation chapter 12 and verses 1 through 5. It says, "Then a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed in the sun and the moon, and under her feet and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor pain, to give birth. And another sign was seen in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his heads 7 diadems. And his tail swept a third of the stars out of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman that is about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. And she gave birth to a son, a man child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and unto his throne." Verses 1 through 5 is a past strategy of the devil which has already failed. Actually, what this is it's a history lesson. But you see, this is no ordinary history lesson. This history lesson is narrated not from the point of view of man, but it's narrated from the angelic perspective. And you'll notice in this history lesson we have three characters. We have the sun, S-O-N. Now I have to say that because there's a sun, S-U-N, in verse 1, but I'm talking here about the sun, S-O-N, sun, verse 5. Then we have a dragon, verse 3. And then we have a woman, verse 1. And to understand this history lesson and to understand the mystery of anti-Semitism, we have to understand who these three characters are. So what we're dealing with here is intense symbolism. If you go back to verse 1, notice what it says. A great sign, that's the Greek word simeon, a great sign appeared in heaven. So when we see that word sign, we know we're dealing with symbols. Yes, we should interpret the book of Revelation literally whenever we can. However, there are sometimes in the Bible, and many times in the book of Revelation, where obvious symbols are in play, and this would be an example of such an occurrence. In fact, Revelation 12 is probably the most symbolic chapter in the most symbolic book of the Bible, the book of Revelation. So we have to have a way of deciphering what these symbols are. And let me give you two interpretive techniques for understanding symbols in the book of Revelation. In other words, when you come to an obvious symbol, how do you interpret it? A lot of people just apply their own sanctified imagination